Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PFS Global Support Podcast. Our mission is to provide support, guidance, and coping strategies for thousands upon thousands of men the world over afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. While medical researchers are learning more about this devastating condition in an effort to cure it, we're here to listen to your experiences, share them across borders, and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle this growing epidemic and put an end to it for future generations.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in this beautiful world. My name is Amir Karakuti, and I'm your host of the PFS Global Support Podcast. And today I'm actually really excited to have another doctor on the show, but this time it's going to be very interesting because the doctor that's coming on the show, his name is Dr. Matthew Bruhin, and he's a psychologist, and he happened to have PFS himself. So he's not just a doctor, not that you have to have PFS to treat it. I'm not saying that at all, because Dr. Erwin Goldstein is my doctor, my medical doctor, and he's dramatically helped me with my PFS. But how nice is it to know that there's somebody that really truly knows from a psychological perspective what we're going through? How interesting is it that there's going to be someone on our show that not only can talk the talk, but you know, unfortunately, he had to walk the walk like many of us that are struggling with post-finasteride syndrome. So let me tell you a little bit about him before we get him on the line. Dr. Bruhin has his own story of how Propecia impacted his life and how his own recovery from PFS is ongoing. That's right. He's still struggling with PFS like many of us. And as a fellow PFS sufferer, Dr. Bruhin realized that there were limited resources anywhere for men diagnosed with PFS. He, as he was going through it, he realized that there's not that much written on it. There's not that much that you can do besides other men that are going through it. But it was kind of, you know, a foggy area, right, for many of us. Well, he knows from what he's been dealing with, and since he's been treated with PFS, and since he's dealing with men that have PFS, he's worked with people that have had relationship problems with their sex drive and people that have been impacted with their marriages. And Dr. Bruhin, so he utilizes several methods, which I'm sure he's going to talk to us about, but some of the things he's written on his website is that he uses mindfulness, dialectical therapies, cognitive behavioral therapies, and some relational therapies, which are useful in recovering lost confidence, repairing often fragmented and damaged marital and family relationships. And I know that because of this podcast, I've had so many people call me and say that they've lost their job, they've lost their wives, they've lost relationships that were flourishing. I actually just spoke to a gentleman from the East Coast that Ivy League graduate, lost his job, lost his girlfriend, and the whole thing. So we're going to be talking about that. And Dr. Bruhin, it's very, very funny. He actually lives in San Diego. I live in San Diego as well. And as soon as I emailed him, we got on the phone and I loved him right off the bat. He's just a really, really cool guy. And can't wait to get him on the phone because the way that he talks, he's so clear and he's so honest, and it's going to be a really good show. So without further ado, let me get Dr. Bruhin on the line. And if you want to get a hold of him, you can go to MatthewBruhin.com, and that's going to be on the show notes. So if you're listening to this, just, you know, there's a link on the bottom. You can connect with him. If you're not, you don't live in San Diego, he does Skype sessions. And I'm sure when you speak to his office, which I've spoken to his office staff, Angelica is also really great. They're just a really, really good group of people to work with. And with that being said, Dr. Bruhin, are you on the line?
I am, sir.
Hey, how are you? Good morning, and thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Thank you so much. I'm really actually looking forward to talking with you, and just an honor to get an opportunity and a platform to speak to this many people at once. It's phenomenal.
Well, thank you so much. And as I was saying, I'm not sure if you heard, but you have an interesting story because not only are you a doctor, are you a psychologist? Is that correct?
Yeah, my doctorate, I have a PhD in addiction psychology. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and then I'm actually a double board certified addiction specialist. So and I'll talk a little bit about that as we go on, because my understanding of chemicals and some of the way medications sometimes affect the body definitely helped me, not only in my own situation, but it helped me understand, I think in a broader sense, what happens when you manipulate certain aspects of the brain. But that's a little bit about my background.
Okay, so speaking of you, now you, from my understanding, you also took the drug and got symptoms of post-finasteride syndrome. Is that correct?
I did. I took the drug for actually on and off for 12 years. Before I started coming off, I took it for just a little bit more than 10 years before I started having some pretty significant side effects that I attributed to the drug. It's entirely possible that I was experiencing things before, but you sometimes you don't start putting two and two together. And once I did that, that's when I started to try to get off the drug.
So as a patient, not as a doctor, how did it feel to be on that end? Was there a lot of resources out there for you? Was there, considering that you have access to a lot more people than most, you know, average people, but were you kind of left in the dark, or did you right away know what was going on? Kind of, you know, if you can tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when I started to have issues, there was virtually nothing online other than a couple of support groups and help groups that were kind of mentioning vague issues with the drug. Obviously, you know, Merck mentioned briefly that there was, you know, I think the magic number is 2%, which we now know is extremely fallacious. But, you know, I knew that there was attributed sexual side effects with the drug, and then when I started to consider what was going on, there was some, you know, reports from different guys and, like I said, various websites, you know, discussing the issue, but not nearly to the degree that there is now, which definitely made it scary. And also, as someone that works to not be paranoid or, you know, over jump to conclusions, it made it very confusing for me, because I kind of knew what I was going through, I knew what I was feeling, but at the same time, it was hard to almost trust and verify. And so I think that's a feeling that a lot of your listeners probably have experienced as well. Certainly the patients that I've worked with understand that.
Absolutely. And with that being said, let me ask you one of the questions I get all the time, and I ask all the medical doctors. What do you tell people that are out there that say this is not real? This is not something that actually can happen. Many of the patients that I've spoken to, they've spoken to their doctors and psychologists, and they say, look, it's all in your head. You know, a drug that you take for a couple years, you know, once you get off of it, it's reversible. So this is not something that you should be concerned about. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have a couple thoughts of it. First of all, just because it's something you can't see does not inherently mean that it's not real. And number two, I'd like, you know, if you asked any of those doctors if you took steroids or any other hormone-altering chemicals, what the chances of having some long-term implication, I suspect a lot of those professionals would say that that is certainly a possibility. I think that most medical professionals, particularly these days, have maybe an overtrust in the FDA, as well as pharmaceutical companies who say they run certain tests and double-blind placebo tests and all these various clinical trials, and come up with numbers that seem to be okay in terms of side effects, and therefore, by saying that and having the government, you know, stamp their seal of approval on it, then it must mean that all people in the larger part are not going to have problems. And again, that's a kind of a dangerous slope, just because people are so different, and that's the thing that I think it fails to be seen by most practitioners, is that a lot of people behave differently on a lot of different medications. And if you talk to any mental health professional, psychologist, psychiatrist, they'll all tell you whenever you take a mind-altering substance, you know, there's over 20-some-odd antidepressants out there. Well, why is that? Well, they do a lot of the same things. However, everybody's brain is different. And so I think that needs to be accounted for, and I would always bring up those issues when talking with an individual and specific provider. My second piece that I would state is if someone doesn't listen to you or is not willing to validate what it is you're seeing, that'd be my first clue to probably be looking elsewhere. The desire for a human being to have some connection, to have some understanding, to have common ground is absolutely imperative to forming a good professional and medical relationship. So I would encourage people to keep moving until they find someone that's willing to listen to them.
I have to tell you, what you just said is probably one of the most comforting things that I have ever heard a doctor say, because it's a very lonely condition. When you're going to doctor to doctor to doctor and every one of them is looking at you like they have no idea what's going on, it literally felt like a twilight zone for me. And I would bring in paperwork and say, look, this is what I see, and to get dismissed. So I wanted to personally thank you for that. I know a lot of the listeners listening, you know, saying, look, if a doctor doesn't want to at least hear you out, go look elsewhere. I think that's a wonderful piece of advice. And I wish I listened to my own instinct when I first started instead of wanting to give up right away. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Now here's another, before I, you know, ask you some other specific questions, what's the difference between someone that's experiencing depression, anxiety, low libido, and all that stuff? I see that as a really good argument. I could very well not be on the drugs and have anxiety and have a loss of libido because I'm in my head. How do you distinguish someone that has PFS and someone that just has anxiety or depression, and that's why all the other parts of their body are not working in kind?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I think, first of all, I would encourage more research on that. I will tell you now, after seeing dozens of males with PFS, and also just understanding myself, a lot of times I think that there may be comorbid or co-occurring anxiety and depression, and maybe it's potential that some of it came prior to the use. And so what we know about depression and anxiety is that, you know, there's usually you'll start to see symptoms of it sometimes, you know, in adolescence and certainly in your 20s, but, you know, sometimes it comes later on. So it's entirely plausible that somebody starts taking Propecia in their early 20s, and when they start to realize they're having a problem and come off, they could also have been, you know, having episodes of depression and anxiety. But I tend to think it has a worsening effect on it, because I think it just, in general, it kind of just weakens your system, and we can touch base. Of course, that's my theory and hypothesis behind it. But it would be difficult for an individual practitioner that was unfamiliar with PFS to render a good diagnosis. And I think we talked briefly last week, and I mentioned this, that when you're dealing with people with a high level of education and they're kind of the leaders in their field, or maybe perhaps that's how they see themselves, you sometimes get, you know, practitioners that have a very strong sense of self-esteem, maybe a touch of narcissism, and they look at things through their own lens. They're not very holistically minded. And so what ends up happening is, if you go to the psychiatrist and you express some of these symptoms, his first conclusion is going to be, oh, wow, these are all symptoms that are very consistent with depression and or anxiety, which is partially true. Those symptoms probably are there. However, the root of those issues may not be exactly what it is for someone that just has depression, anxiety. So I think the best way to get a diagnosis is to, you know, look at the symptom, find a practitioner that is understanding of what it is that you're dealing with, definitely is willing to take other people's opinion, other professionals' opinion into consideration, look through things through a broad lens, and then I think the biggest and telltale point is it someone that has these symptoms that also took finasteride? Because if that's the case, I think there's a great possibility that some of those symptoms are due to the use of finasteride.
Wow, that's That's brilliant. Matter of fact, my doctor, Dr. Irwin Goldstein, before you can even go and sit with him, he makes you go to a physical therapist to test the muscles in your hip and your, you know, penis area to make sure that it's not a physical situation first. With me, it was, you know, I couldn't get erections anymore. I'm 36 years old. This is when I was 34 years old. And then he makes you go to a psychologist to see if it's a psychological issue. Thirdly, he goes and checks you out to see if it's a chemical issue. So I think I see what you're saying. And essentially what you're saying is there's not too many checks and balances sometimes, right? Someone in the field of psychology sees it from a psychological point of view, and they don't go, well, let's go check your blood test and see if there's something going on chemically.
Correct.
Is that what you're pointing to?
Correct. And conversely, you know, the medical doctor that may just be looking at the test may not be taking into consideration some of the, you know, psychological symptoms that are going on or that could possibly be exacerbated by the PFS and the experiences of the PFS. So, for example, if you're dealing with a crisis situation, you know, we talk a lot about post-traumatic stress disorder now, and we're starting to do a lot of research on that. But if you're dealing with a crisis-like situation and an intense situation as a man that's lost his ability to have an erection, to satisfy his spouse or his girlfriend, I mean, these are daunting, frightening, lifelong affecting considerations. And so when a man starts to go through this, all kinds of thoughts of fear, you know, am I even worth being alive at this point? I mean, very serious thoughts start to come. And the more those are exacerbated and the more you can't get answers, the more frantic and the more frightened you become. And so men develop sometimes what I see, it looks almost like an obsessive compulsive disorder. They're obsessed with getting online and trying to find any information, any cure, any professional that might be able to help them out. And you put those symptoms in front of a psychiatrist that has no idea what's going on, and you may be diagnosed with generalized anxiety, you may be diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. Certainly most of these people are depressed, probably because of chemical imbalances in the brain, as well as situationally because of the trauma that going through something like this is. I mean, this is a serious medical, physical situation that's occurring, and most guys don't talk about it, they don't have the support network for it, and they live in this dark little room with this deal trying to figure out what's going on and how to solve it in complete shame and embarrassment. And you put all that together, you're bound to have a lot of symptoms that pop up.
You know, it's funny you said that, because when I found out what happened to me and I got diagnosed, I went to two of my other friends who also happened to take Propecia or finasteride, and I told them what was happening to me. I said, look, I don't have libido. I have mental fog. I don't have sexual thoughts anymore. This is really surreal. And they looked at me and said, oh, that's been happening to me as well. And I said, well, why the heck did you not tell me? I'm so confused. You're one of my closest friends. And they said, because I was too embarrassed. And so, and absolutely, I agree with you. When people say, well, there's not enough studies that say that this is actually a situation or condition, I think there's some truth to what you're saying. A lot of the people that, A, they may have taken Propecia, stopped getting on it and got the symptoms, so they didn't correlate it, or B, they're so embarrassed. I mean, who wants to go to a doctor and say that their penis doesn't work anymore? Who wants to go and tell, you know, their physician that not only do they not have a sex drive, they don't have any interest in sex or anything for that matter? So it's a very, very, very interesting situation that happens with PFS.
Yeah, it really is, and an unfortunate one for young men to have to deal with.
So let's get to the young men. What would you say to the people listening on the show that are going through the crash right now, that are just they're on, you know, they are getting on the computer and they happen to log in and find us, even though they've been on the, you know, when I was first starting, I was spending 5 hours a day looking at all the miserable stories, and it got me worse, to be honest with you. So I just completely stopped and went back to living my life. But what would you say to someone that accidentally found this and is on, and is listening to this podcast.
Well, it's funny that you mention that, because what you essentially self-prescribe, which I would recommend completely, is exactly what I do prescribe to clients that come in and see me. Most people that come in that are either, you know, actively going through the crash and or kind of experiencing these, you know, post-acute withdrawal, however you want to term that experience that leaves you taking naps every day, basically feeling completely void of life, that can be ongoing for sometimes years. In my case, it was around 2.5 years. When you have to deal with that, it becomes really difficult to find answers and to know what to do. And a lot of young men turn to the internet, like we do for everything these days. And unfortunately, the internet, like so many disorders, provides answers that are not always concrete, as well as can send you on wild goose chases. So a lot of times when I get people in my office, I really prescribe them literally, listen, no more internet activity, no more PFS searches, no more Propecia searches online for 30 days, just to allow the anxiety, which we talked about earlier, to kind of calm down. And then I reassure them and I say, listen, and this is, I think, where my practice has been invaluable for some men, and I think that if you find a supportive therapist that is somewhat savvy at dealing with issues like these, it can be so helpful. It's slow down, understand that recovery is always going to be there in some factor or form. Stop the negative thinking. Stop believing that you're going to be this way for life. Understand that there are solutions that are coming about every day, and that in general, the human body is an extremely restorative organ. And whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and you need to just hold tight for a little bit. Patience is probably the problem that I see the most, and it was with me too, because when you're dealing with this sort of thing, you're really wanting to find an answer quick, and your overall fear is, I'll never be the same, I'm never going to be able to satisfy a woman again, I can't live without an erection. All these pieces are terrifying, and they go through your mind. But the answer is there is help out there. A lot of guys make progress and move forward, but those things take time, and the answers aren't the same for everybody. So the worst thing you can do is start to spin around, go down the rabbit hole, as I call it, and start to listen to every single person out there going this way and that way, and complicating things even more, both for your system and mentally. So I agree with you. Getting off, stop looking at all the negative material online, calming down, getting back to some really important basics like just good sleep, good health, good exercise, making sure you have someone that's supportive when you're having down times. All those are really key components to help a body recover, whether it's from cancer or from PFS. And so I incorporate a lot of those principles in my practice when I'm working with guys.
So for someone that's listening on to this show and they are depressed, okay, so they're getting off the internet. My first suggestion is to go to a professional such as you, someone that understands what's going on. But what can they do in the meantime? So that, you know, if they're not getting off the if they're getting off the computer, but their head is spinning and they're just kind of out of control with where they're at.
Right. The first thing you have to do is kind of have a moment with yourself in the mirror, so to speak, and get in your head that this is not going to be a sprint to the finish line. There is no immediate cure for this. A lot of people have made full recoveries. In my situation, I would consider my recovery somewhere in the 80 to 90% region, and it's been 4+ years now that since I've taken Propecia, and some might be less, but there's always an amount of recovery, and no one knows exactly what that recovery will be and how long it will take. So you have to kind of have the understanding that you're going to be patient, that you're going to accept that recovery will come and that you are going to stay on that course, but that it is not a sprint. It's not going to happen overnight. And so you're going to have to be patient with yourself, take small steps along that path in order to get to where you need to go. And then, like I said, you get down to the basics. You find a practitioner medically that has experience and is willing to listen and understand, because you're going to need to have tests done and all that sort of work. There will most likely have to be some medications that are prescribed at some points in time to probably assist you in the process, but you need to find someone that listens to you. And then I think having a coach, you know, a life coach or a shrink of some type, psychologist, someone to help you work through these issues. If you're with a partner and you're married, or you have a boyfriend or girlfriend, certainly finding someone that can help you through some of the sexual issues and some of those issues is really, really critical, important. And then third and foremost is just sticking to the basics. Eat healthy. If you're exhausted, make sure that you schedule times to take naps. Take it easy on yourself. Exercise in moderate activity. If all you can do is take a few walks of laps around the block, then just do that every day. Find something that you can do every day and just do it and be patient, because things will come in time, but it takes time.
I have to say that is exactly what worked for me. I was sitting here nodding my head, and it seems so simple. But the truth of it is, I have this distinction that I mentioned before, the theory of life versus living life. And, you know, when you're sitting behind a computer trying to figure it out, you know, one of my first questions I always ask people that, you know, email me, I say, if you were cured today, what would you do? They say, I would hang out with my family. I would go back to working out. I love jogging. I would go back to my hobbies. And so I said, why are you waiting for someone to cure you before you can do all that stuff? The stuff that most people want to go back to, which is, you know, living a healthy life, eating properly, and having their connections, it's the opposite. You, my experience, and I'm curious to get your opinion, I think doing that stuff leads to a solution versus waiting for a solution in order to do that stuff, such as hanging out with your friends and family and going and working out. I think what you just said is the opposite holds true. If you work out, you'll feel better. If you eat better, you'll feel better. If you hang out with your friends, you're emotionally start feeling better. Is that what you're pointing towards?
What you just did was what we call a cognitive reframe, and that's exactly what it is. You don't solve a solution in order to do what you want to do. You do what you want to do to create a solution, and I think that's exactly the point of things. The piece that, you know, I know is difficult on guys is they're probably sitting out there thinking to themselves, well, easy to say, but I have barely any energy. I feel like I'm an 80-year-old man. How am I supposed to find any excitement in life if I don't even want to be with a woman again, or if I don't even think I'll ever be able to have sex again? And so I understand those pieces and those components, but like I said, take it slow. You know, if you don't have energy to go pump iron and be the buff guy that you remembered yourself before you started this, be patient. It will return. Do what you can do now and accept where you're at and understand it's only temporary. You know, there's a lot of silver linings in this whole thing. I can just share briefly, you know, some of my story here just for a second. But, you know, I know that before I started noticing, you know, really bad symptoms from with the PFS, certainly in my 20s, I was an extremely virile and, frankly, promiscuous type of guy, and I never knew if I'd ever be able to commit into a long-term serious relationship because of how I was. And I got to tell you, when I met who now the woman who's my current wife, you know, I went through a period where she had to be very patient with me because my sex drive, frankly, just wasn't there, nor was my ability to maintain erection and all these other issues. But you know what? Over the course of my recovery, I learned a side of myself that was beyond just my brawn and just beyond what I saw as my sexual ability. And going through this period and maybe not having the extreme attraction to multiple women all the time really helped me look and understand a deeper side of myself. It taught me how to relate better with women, and it also made me a more monogamous and a more respectful partner, which really actually created a situation where I could engage in a very happy marriage. So I think that the other piece of this is that, you know, when you get stuck in a crisis, it's very easy to see the negative components of it, but I'm quite certain that through all these bad experiences with the many men that are out there, there are going to be moments that can be extremely useful and learn learning themselves, learning their partners, learning to reach out to other family members, to other men. And I think some of those lessons can be taken. And during the course of your recovery, which does come, you'll be able to hold on to some of those things and possibly come out on the other side, maybe a little bit of a better man than you were before.
I love that. And actually, looking back, I know this is going to sound really crazy. And you know, people who have called me, they say a couple of things happen. Either they don't believe that I had PFS because I'm doing pretty good, or they think that you must not know what I'm going through because it's the worst thing in the world. So if you're in it, trust me, we understand when you're in it, it's the worst thing in the world. It's almost like there's no hope. But if you just heard Dr. Bruin, there is hope. And I'll be honest with you, if I could go back, I would not change having what I have today. And the reason is, if I didn't have it, I wouldn't have someone like you on this call right now. So there is huge silver linings. It really depends on how you look at it. I don't wish this on anybody, but as you slow down, as you start to see the better part of humanity, the better part of what's good about what's going on with you, and the relationships you can form, they may look different. I actually wouldn't change anything, to be honest with you. I'd love to have a better sex life, but as far as you know, I'm not feeling guilty for what I did anymore, because I actually see a silver lining, as you mentioned. It's like you're literally reading my mind. So
yeah,
that's beautiful.
I agree with you completely. And you know, it's most men, and I have this kind of theory as well, but most men that have high DHT levels and start to lose their hair and made the unfortunate decision to take Propecia, you know, I think a lot of them were very sexual, very virile men. I think that's just generally the type of guys that those are. They're active in the gym. They're physically active outdoors. They're very manly men. And so they hang a lot of their ego and a lot of who they are on their sexual prowess and those components. And I've had talks with several patients. I can think of one gentleman right now in my mind who was going through a new relationship after a divorce. And he was with a younger woman, too. And he said it was so difficult for him to believe that this woman could accept him and enjoy him and love him despite the fact that he wasn't this sexual beast that he saw himself previously. And so I think you got to constantly challenge the paradigm. You have to challenge, you know, who are you? What is your value? What is your worth? Understand what women actually really want, not just what Hollywood or porn really produces in a man's mind. And understand that a lot of the things that you can learn and take from this will make you a better lover, believe it or not, a better partner, a better friend, a better person. And so, you know, focusing on those pieces as you go through the transitions and the recovery, I think is crucial in just living a meaningful life. And like I would totally agree with you. I mean, you wouldn't wish this on your worst enemy. But the fact is that people have cancer every day. People live with diabetes. The people have major issues that affect all of them. And the people that take those illnesses and take those problems and turn them into something for good are the people that live extremely, extremely successful and valuable and, you know, enjoyable lives.
You know, as you were talking, there's an old Zen story, I think. I think it's going to be very relevant. There was a gentleman that was spinning a tiger by his tail in San Diego. And a guy walks to him and says, "Why are you spinning a tiger by his tail?" And he goes, "Oh, to get rid of the lions." And he goes, "But there's no lions in San Diego." And the guy says, "I told you, see, it's working." And the story behind that is, when you feel miserable and when you're saying, you know, no one's going to love me, look at me, I'm a mess, and all that stuff, and then a woman picks up on that and says, "Well, I don't want to be with a guy that thinks he's a mess and that, you know, he's got this idea of himself that's low." And then you go, "See, I told you this stuff is working. I am a mess." The truth of the matter is, as you mentioned, when you see the silver lining, in my opinion, my wife loves me more than for what my penis can do. My wife actually appreciates me for what's going on and how I'm handling it. And now I'm doing radio shows. And what's been in my experience, just speaking to my wife and some other women that their husbands or boyfriends have had it, is that they've become more of a man because they have sensitivities. Now, God forbid, my wife may have cancer, breast cancer in the future, but it would never occur to me to go, oh, she's not a whole human. I'm going to let her go. So when we settle and give ourselves compassion, the other side gives us compassion as well. So I don't know if you agree with me, but I think it starts with the person first, which is, you know, the person that's going with, you know, with PFS, not waiting for something to get fixed, but learning that the fixing starts with themselves first.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. I think it's absolutely well put. I think the other thing I would capitalize on is all relationships are based out of vulnerability, and most relational dynamics, when they start to break down, occurs when people start to pull apart, close up, wall up, and pull out, so to speak. And we usually do that because we're not feeling safe. And the number one way to keep, particularly a woman, but, you know, if you happen to be in a gay relationship, it doesn't matter. Any type of relationship is based on the ability to be honest, but more than just honest, being vulnerable with our partner. And what I can tell you is that when women who traditionally have seen a guy that tries to kind of handle himself like the head honcho, so to speak, is willing to say, listen, I'm weak, I'm vulnerable, I don't have all the answers. Will you love me? Will you please support me through this process anyways? That kind of bond and connection that can occur out of that will last a lifetime.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's awesome. So I have a couple questions that I got from some of my readers, or some of the people that have been listening to my show, and I was wondering, would you be open to hearing a couple of these questions and see if you can answer
Certainly.
Some of these?
Certainly.
Cool. So now, this doesn't pertain to the person that's having PFS, but their spouses. And one of them, they said, I'm not as sexual as she would like. I need Viagra. Sometimes my penis doesn't get hard. All of this hurts her ego and it makes her feel not wanted or sexy. What would be your response to your partner feeling like they're not being supported or their ego has been broken because of what's going on with the man?
And I hear that a lot, and that's again why I mentioned, and I'd state, you know, find a very good relational counselor as well as perhaps a sexologist that's, you know, has worked with couples that have either had, you know, prostate removal and or you know, a lot of guys, unfortunately, in war, sometimes things happen. There's a whole host and cause that causes some types of sexual dysfunction. But usually women, and I know this, and my wife would echo this as well, that when my libido goes down or when I go through a little bit of a downward side of things or it's not as much, it's hard as a woman to feel like your, particularly your male partner, is not attracted to you. And so that what needs to happen there is just a better source of communication. There has to be a kind of a meeting of the minds and a discussion about what's going on internally. And I think what ends up happening most of the times is that guys feel bad and they get defensive and they don't want to talk about it. That's how we as men act. And so their woman starts to complain about sex or doesn't feel loved, or you're not attracted to me anymore. And the man usually is like, oh, that's nonsense, that's bullshit, I'm so tired of hearing about these types of things, and perhaps goes storming out the door or shuts down and just gets quiet. And then what ends up happening is that chasm starts to grow between the partners, and that then leads to a vicious cycle of feeling even more unattractive and more unworthy. I would really counsel and suggest that men take a very opposite approach. It's the kind of thing that even if your penis isn't working the way you want it to, there's nothing wrong with getting into a shower and holding your wife and kissing her and touching her and telling her how much you find her attractive and beautiful, as well as tell her, listen, this is a process, and please be patient with me as I go through this. What can I do to make you understand that I love you and that I find you attractive, even if my body's not responding exactly how I'd like it to be? There are definitely techniques and ways that you can actually grow intimacy. You know, I almost use this as an example. The blind man has a very acute sense of hearing. And when you're not able to just do what it is that you do with your penis normally, there are ways of actually increasing intimacy, increasing sexual satisfaction and skill if you're willing to be vulnerable enough to take it there. And so I think those are the things that men need to think about as well as the spouses.
So what I'm hearing is it's really a two-way street. Like when you go, my wife or my girlfriend is like this, what should I do? Again, it's not just, well, we need to do this. You need to tell your wife, or you need to fix your friend, or if you're a gay man, you know, your boyfriend, et cetera, et cetera. So from what I'm hearing, it's a two-way street. It's an open form of communication on both ends.
It is, and traditionally, partners, I would say, even more so with straight couples, there's such a lack of communication that's fostered around our sexuality as we grow up. You know, you either because of religious reasons or traditionality, cultural implications. And so really, as we grow up, we start to develop in our own male and then female minds what this sexual arrangement looks like. What do we hold back? What do we not? What's allowed? What's not? What are we allowed to talk about even with our own spouse? And so when situations that are negative or crisis situations and that pertain particularly to sexuality, most men completely shrink back. They isolate, they stop talking, they don't share, they don't look for alternate possibilities and solutions. And so, you know, it's unfortunate, because if there was a PFS and women unfortunately had it, they would probably be a little bit better at figuring out solutions about it. That's how men are. Once that goes, it's like we just completely stop relationally functioning altogether. So, you know, it's really about being open and humble and vulnerable enough to try new things, to do new things, to work with your partner through the process. And if you're willing to do that, and if you try to do that, and if you work with a professional to do it, it's amazing what will come out on the other side. And I tell this to other guys, you know, listen, am I as sexual today as I remembered being before finasteride? Absolutely not. But let's also remember that I was in my 20s. I think men oftentimes don't account for other factors outside of PFS. You become so focused on finasteride and that you sometimes forget that maybe you're just possibly aging. Maybe your libido would have gone down some anyway. So I would encourage men to just be patient with themselves sexually. There's a lot of things that doctors can do, whether it's with Viagra. You know, that definitely, you know, Dr. Goldstein has some really good ideas in terms of increasing hormonology and various things. So there's a lot of possibilities and solutions. None are the same for everyone. But I can tell you, it's highly unlikely that you're not going to gain some of your sexuality back. It may not be what you remembered, but what I can tell you is those moments that you do share and enjoy become exceedingly better if you learn to appreciate them versus always looking in the rearview mirror.
You are 100% right, absolutely right. And matter of fact, you know, a little bit more silver lining, my wife is pregnant after really trying and having awkward moments of having sex. But one of the things I realized as you were talking, the distinction between a problem and a project. And what I noticed that really worked for my wife and I is what I'm going through is not a problem. It's more of a project. Like, well, let's figure this out. Like, there's been moments where we're having sex, my penis would stop working. So she would say, hey, honey, it's okay. Let's go watch TV. It was like, not something that we need to figure out and what's the problem here. And one of the things I've noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the people that don't see this as a crisis tend to do better than the ones that need to figure this out in this moment. Is there any truth to that?
I would agree with you completely. A lot of it comes down to attitude and perspective. In our business, we call it resilience. It's something that people have tried to start to learn how to measure and test for, but it always comes to be that the person that has resilient factors to their personality, an attitude of resilience, meaning accepting what's here today and allowing things to unfold for tomorrow naturally instead of fighting it and living in fear of it, those type of people I think are going to come out on the other side pretty happy with the product that they went in with. And that's the whole message here. You have to keep an attitude of hope, belief, and you really have to, you know, make sure that every day you're reminding yourself of those you know, character qualities and those facets, because if you let go of that and you give in to obsession or you give in to fear, I think your overall quality of life as well as the trajectory of your recovery are going to be really impeded.
Yeah, I would say instead of post-traumatic stress disorder, it should be called post-traumatic growth. because there can be after a situation like this where you can grow and be better from it. So, I mean, same thing as what you were saying. I've spoken to people that have PTSD, and the ones that are flourishing are the ones that have grown from it, that are speaking to others, that are going to schools, that are talking to other people in the military. But that's for another show. But we're almost, you know, wow, it's crazy. We're almost done with time. I have one last question, and if you can just have any last parting words, is this is another question. When my girlfriend hangs out with her friends and they talk about their boyfriends or constantly trying to have sex with them, my girlfriend just has to stay silent, which again makes her not feel wanted. I guess this goes back to what you were saying, is creating an open communication about things like that. Do you have any other thoughts on that?
That, I mean, I hear that story, and I mean, my heart just goes out to that individual. I mean, that's a real tough one. But what I would say is that sounds to me like probably a 20-something-year-old man, maybe not, maybe older, that is, I don't want to say assuming, but understands that sometimes girl talk and women get into their whole routines about, you know, what their man's doing in bed and this and that. And I'm not going to lie, there's some reality to that. But I think it's probably a little overgrown in whoever's mind it is. And to be frank with you, that's how life works. And you can focus on the fact that your girlfriend must feel somehow negated by her friends because she doesn't have all these stories of getting mauled in bed. But I believe at the end of the day, most women kind of would admit to at least a man like me, if they were talking very privately in a therapeutic session, that women will just be women. That's like a bunch of girl room talk, no more different than talking in a locker room. You can't allow those type of social interactions and the looseness of them to affect the reality of what your relationship is. And men, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on sex, and why not? Sex is a beautiful, phenomenal thing, and that is certainly at the heart and the issue of why PFS is so damaging for a lot of guys, amongst other reasons, but certainly that seems to be one of the glowing obvious ones. But you have to remember that, no matter how many times you have sex, I mean, I think the person's had, who will take Will Chamberlain, for example, he still had a lot of time in his day to be doing a lot of other things. And so I think you have to focus on what you do have, appreciate the moments that are sexual or sexual in nature, and stop focusing on the rawness and the virility and really, frankly, the sexual nature of those moments, and start to turn your brain and focus on intimacy. I had one patient, a gentleman, tell me, he's like, well, basically what you're telling me to do is just to turn into a woman. And I said, well, it's funny, because I said, sometimes when you go through this, I said, you start to doubt that you're a man. But I said, you know what, it's kind of funny that, you know, women have a better and a more evolved sense of what intimacy should be, and so, you know what, if you can end up being a male that cuddles a little bit more, takes your time a little bit more, because maybe your penis doesn't get hard as quickly as you'd like it, believe it or not, your woman's going to end up being happier on the other end of it. And maybe it doesn't sound as sexy as it should be in TMZ in your 20s, but guess what? You talk to any men or women that are in their 60s or 70s or even 50s for that much, if all you're going on is bang for the buck, so to speak, you're not going to be in a very stable long-term relationship. So for the guys that are younger, just work on enhancing your relationship and building it to what it needs to be sooner versus waiting for it to catch up, because it's all going to catch up to us at some point in time.
Yeah, and you know, having a girlfriend or a wife talk to their friends about sex and, you know, how they're not happy or unhappy or whatever, I would say welcome to the human race. That's just kind of what people do. It's like, you know, I don't know if that's something that needs to be fixed, but if you look at, like, reality shows, that's all it's about. So, I don't know if that's a problem more than it is just –
I'll also share with that listener, obviously as someone that does a ton of counseling, if I had a nickel for every time I had a married couple come into my office, that I'm not talking in their 50s and 60s, I'm telling you 30s and 40s, that one or both or the woman, female partner has complaints about the sex life, or he drinks too much beer and he doesn't care to have sex anymore, or he doesn't look at me passionately the way he used to. It's not just guys with PFS. These are issues that affect all of us. And sometimes when you get in, like I said, and start looking through that laser lens of I have this disorder, I have this massive problem that can never be solved, and you adopt that attitude, suddenly you start to think about life and think about things incorrectly. We call those cognitive distortions. And, you know, it's really important, like I said, to work with someone that may be able to help you work through those things and see things through a broader lens and perspective so that you don't become depressed or allow your relationship to unravel.
Yeah, and a quick story before we get some last words from you. When I went to the doctor, Dr. Goldstein, I actually had to go to a psychologist. You know, he has an in-house psychologist as well to make sure that nothing's wrong with, you know, with my psychology. And I went there with her a couple times, and he said, you know, you're going to start maybe getting anxiety or depressed eventually. It may happen. It typically does. And a couple of weeks later, I went back to the psychologist. I came back with my wife. And he goes, you know, it's really interesting. You have a really good outlook on life. And I'm really curious, just so I can help my other patients, what is it about you? What is it that's not bothering you? And my wife did something really interesting. She put her hand on my knee and said, Dr. Goldstein, I think Amir is too stupid to know that this is a problem. And what that kind of, in a nutshell, explains where I'm at. I didn't see this as a problem, so it was nothing I needed to fix. It was a situation that happened to my body. Now, that doesn't mean every once in a while I don't get in my head and I go, why did I do it and all that stuff. For the most part, though, if I stub my toe, it would hurt for a little bit until I stopped thinking about it or I went and moved on with my life. And so it's you know, what you're saying basically is like, when you slow down and when you stop getting online and when you stop looking at this as a problem to fix right this minute and you go back into life, you will still have PFS, but it's not going to be as bothersome anymore. You know, it's just part of life. It's part of what, you know, if it wasn't PFS, it could have been something else. It could have been a parking ticket for that matter, you know, that could ruin your day. So, you know, that's how I at least you know, I never fixed myself. I was too dumb to know that it needed fixing. And I'm not downplaying anybody else, but I'm just giving an openness or an open idea that when you settle back into life, things will start to get easier. That's just a natural course of how my life has been.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I think your story is extremely relevant, and I hope people listen to that approach, because I think, you know, I mean, again, what you're talking about is just a resilience. It's just when something bad happens, no matter what it is, you understand that it's there and it's something that you just walk through. And the people that are able to just walk through the bad times and move forward are the people that are going to be standing in a happy spirits at the end of the race.
Exactly. And with that being said, is there any last words you'd like to say? Maybe talk, you know, how can people reach you and things like that?
Well, you know, the best way for people to get in contact with me would probably be through my website, which you mentioned, which is www.matthewbruin.com. Matthew has two T's in it, and Bruin is Bruhin.com. I do give some talks and lectures, and, you know, if anybody wants to engage, they're more than welcome to call my office, send me an email. I have gentlemen that I've talked to all over the world, Russia, England. I'm always shocked about how far-reaching this issue is. But you know, I'm all definitely always available, and really have a heart. Like I said, I didn't go into this as an occupational thing. My occupation, I've been very successful, and that's very well set. I do this more as just a way of giving back and hopefully helping people work through something and do so in a way that might have been a little bit easier than even for myself, you know, when there wasn't a lot of help and resources. So, you know, that's kind of my mission in this whole thing.
Well, I'm telling you, this is probably been one of my favorite podcasts to date. And I have to say, it's given me newfound hope. I feel just a lot lighter right now getting off the phone. And I hope the listeners that have been listening to this know that there is hope and there is resources like Dr. Bruin. There are people out there that know what's going on with you. So please don't give up. Reach out to people like Dr. Bruin. And, you know, let's say that you've gotten them better in the psychological point of view. Do you also have resources for them as far as medical, if you need them to go somewhere else? Okay, great.
I do. Yeah, and Dr. Goldstein's great. I have some other endocrinologists that I'm familiar with that can assist. And you know, I think people have to understand that not everyone's the same. Everybody has their own individual way that PFS manifests. And so you have to be patient. You have to work with a provider, a medical provider that's patient. And I really do encourage people to keep that coaching or that psychological component along for the ride, because, you know, this is a process. And I think that's the thing people, and I hope your listeners take in mind and to heart, that, you know, it's not an overnight solution, but that there is really good things that can happen along the way. I've known many men that have made, you know, very good recoveries. I've known some that have just made partial recoveries, but that's ongoing. And we don't know how long this, like I said, the body's extremely resilient. It could be that in 10 years, every single one of us never knew that this happened, other than the fact that we just aged normally and chronologically. So, you know, I think people need to think and hope for the best always, find the support they need, be honest, be open, and like I said, mostly don't give up. Be patient and don't give up, because I think at the end of the road, there's good things that can happen for everybody.
One last question before we go. If I know I'm going to get emails from this podcast. Would you be willing and open to coming back on the show if there's more questions from people on the podcast?
I would absolutely love to. Anything I can do to support this community, I will do. And, you know, I think every one of these guys that have had to go through this, and I think we need to continue to unite and to push forward towards recovery. I think it's crucial.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Bruin. Again, if you need to visit, you know, if you want to talk to him, I highly suggest it. You go to www.matthewbruin.com, and again, it's on the show notes. You can go on the notes where you clicked on it to listen to this, and you'll find that. And I want to just thank you again so much for your time. I know you have a very busy schedule, and the fact that you took an hour out of your time means a lot to me and the listeners. And I'm sure we'll be staying in touch, and thank you so much, and have a wonderful weekend if I don't hear from you.
Yeah, you'll hear from me soon. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Take care. Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Matthew Bruin. Wow, that was absolutely amazing. I really had a wonderful time with him. And maybe I'm biased because he actually has, you know, he's had PFS, and you can hear it or feel it that he really cares. And wow, I'm so excited to have these kind of resources. Again, I've had Dr. Goldstein on, who's a wonderful resource. Now we have a psychologist, Dr. Matthew Bruin. We're on the up and up. These doctors are sharing their stories. These doctors are telling people that this is a legitimate condition. So if you are listening to this, just know you're not alone. You're not alone. You have people that are vouching for you. There are people out there that want to help you, such as Dr. Matthew Bruin. So take the time to reach out to people. Now, that's the part that's going to be your job. Your job now that you know that there's resources, is to go out and start making contact. If you don't feel comfortable talking to them right away, give me a call. I'm always willing to talk to you on the phone, Skype. If you want to email me, you can email me at pfsglobalradio@gmail.com. I'm also available. I can connect you with other people who've had PFS. But the bottom line is, there's people out there that really want to help you, that love you for what you're going through, and that understand what you are going through, okay? And with that being said, I'm going to let this podcast go so it's in perfect form the way it is. Thank you so much for joining us. Wow, it's been a whole hour, and we'll talk to you on the next podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to PFS Global Support, where we offer coping strategies to thousands upon thousands of men afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. We're here to share your experiences across borders, and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle PFS and put an end to this growing epidemic for future generations.